Let's get down to business. Wall Street took a holiday to observe Good Friday. U.S. markets are open on Monday, but many European markets are closed today and Monday. We did have an important bit of economic data released this morning. The third and final estimate of gross domestic product growth for the fourth quarter was 1.4%. This was higher than the 1% annualized pace that was reported in the second estimate. The increase in real GDP in the fourth quarter reflected positive contributions from PCE, residential fixed investment, federal government spending that were partly offset by negative contributions from non-residential fixed investment, exports, private inventory investment, and state and local government spending. Imports, which are a subtraction in the calculation of GDP, decreased. So, real GDP growth for all of 2015 came in at 2.4%. That's the same as 2014. The core personal consumption expenditures, that's a gauge of individual spending, were up 1.3%, a pace of growth unchanged from the second estimate. Also, in today's report, we learned the balance sheets of U.S. companies weakened during the quarter. Corporate profits plunged 11.5% in the fourth quarter from a year ago. It's the biggest drop since a 31% collapse at the end of 2008. That was during the height of the financial crisis. For 2015 as a whole, pre-tax earnings fell 3.1%, and that's the most in 7 years, according to the Commerce Department. Even though falling corporate profits might be considered a signal of recession, a lot of the decline in profit comes from energy. Outside energy, the picture looks different. For the full year, consumer spending grew 3.1%. That was the fastest pace since 2005. Residential investment, another domestic-facing category, advanced at an upwardly revised 10.1% pace, best gain in a year and a half. Business investment was down 2.1% instead of 1.9% reported in the second read. Looking forward to first quarter GDP, we might expect more mixed results. The Commerce Department's broad measure of consumer spending showed a healthy gain in January, but retail sales were lackluster for the first 2 months of the year. Durable goods orders, a measure of manufacturing demand, fell sharply in February after a strong increase in January. And as we near the end of the first quarter, earnings expectations on Wall Street point to a possible fourth consecutive quarter of declining earnings. Next week's economic data could also bolster or hurt the market, depending on how it signals the next step for Federal Reserve policy. For next Friday's jobs report, the consensus estimate calls for an increase of 200,000 jobs in March, which would be below February's gains of 242,000. Also next week, some housing data, which will include pending home sales, as well as the S&P Case-Shiller Price Index. With gasoline prices at their lowest point for the Easter weekend since 2004, holiday travelers have something to cheer about, but they better fill up their tanks fast. Prices at the pump are climbing quickly as the summer driving season approaches. On Thursday, the national average for a gallon of regular gas rose above $2 a gallon for the first time since December 31st, albeit by only a penny. Across the country, according to the AAA Motor Club, drivers are paying 31 cents more per gallon than only a month ago. The principal reason for the rise in gasoline prices is the roughly 50% spike in the American oil benchmark from $26 a barrel on February 11th to just over $40 a barrel earlier in the week before crude prices sputtered over the past couple of days. Rising U.S. auto sales and production helped the UAW grow its membership by over 5,000 last month. That, according to a recent union filing with the Labor Department, total membership 408,639, up 1.3% from the end of 2014. While it was the sixth straight year of growth for the UAW, membership remains well below the peak of about 1.5 million in 1979. If you watch Netflix on Verizon or AT&T, the streaming video service is keeping you from getting the full picture, and it claims it's for your own good. A week after the wireless carriers were accused of throttling video speeds on their networks, Netflix has stepped forward to take the blame for the degraded video quality. Netflix told the Wall Street Journal it's been slowing its video transmission on wireless carriers around the world, including Verizon and AT&T, for 5 years to protect consumers from exceeding mobile data caps. Netflix now plans to shift some of that control to viewers themselves. In May, it expects to make a data saver feature for mobile apps available to some subscribers that would let them choose either to stream more but lower quality video if they have a smaller capacity data plan, or to increase video quality if they have a less restrictive plan. In the heat of Cuba's revolution from the 1960s to the 1980s, foreign bands like the Rolling Stones were considered subversive and blocked from the radio. Cubans listened to their music in secret, passing records from hand to hand. Tonight, the Stones will perform a free concert in Havana before an estimated crowd of 400,000. Did you hear about the artificial intelligence program that Microsoft designed to chat like a teenage girl? It was totally yanked offline in less than a day after it began spouting racist, sexist, and otherwise offensive remarks. Microsoft said it was all the fault of some really mean people who launched a coordinated effort to make the chatbot, known as Tay, spelled T-A-Y, to make it respond in inappropriate ways. The program used a lot of slang and tried to provide humorous responses in response to messages and photos. The chat box went live on Wednesday, and Microsoft invited the public to chat with Tay on Twitter and some other messaging services popular with teens and young adults. But some users found it wasn't hard to nudge Tay into making offensive comments. Apparently prompted by repeated questions or statements that contained offensive words. Soon, Tay was making sympathetic references to Hitler and creating a furor on social media. A suicide bomber blew himself up in a soccer stadium in Baghdad, Iraq today, killing 29 people, wounding 60. ISIS claimed responsibility. The U.S. military has killed a senior ISIS leader in Syria as part of a push to wipe out top commanders in the terrorist group. The dead official, who was known as Haji Imam, served as Islamic State's finance minister. This past Tuesday, Arizona voters, and especially voters in Maricopa County, experienced a colossal screw-up. The county recorder, Helen Purcell, faced with a smaller budget from the legislature, cut the number of polling places from 200 back in 2012 to just 60. That's a 70% reduction. The result? Incredibly long lines at some polling stations, with some voters forced to wait 5 hours before they could vote. Hundreds of voters were still in line waiting to vote in Maricopa County when the Associated Press projected that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump were going to win. At one polling site, there were more than 600 voters in line when polls closed at 7 p.m. In downtown Phoenix, voters were still waiting in line at midnight. For many people, transportation to a distant polling site was a problem. Others were dissuaded from voting after hearing about the long lines in news reports. Still others just could not wait online for hours. Some voting sites also ran out of ballots, and elections officials had to rush to get more ballots to the site in time. Many voters who were registered to one or the other of the major parties were told they showed up on voting rolls as independents and were not allowed to vote or were given a provisional ballot, which was not counted. Maricopa County Recorder Helen Purcell, the woman in charge of administering the county's elections, said in an interview with a local news reporter Tuesday night that the voters for getting in line were at least partly to blame for the long lines. On Wednesday, she told the County Board of Supervisors that she would do it differently if she could do it again, and that she takes the blame for what went wrong. She also blamed independent and unaffiliated voters who tried to vote for slowing down the process. It is doubtful that changes in polling places would have stood up under the scrutiny of the Voting Rights Act and might prove to be violations of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Look for lawsuits to come. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey called the situation unacceptable and said that the state's elections officials must evaluate what went wrong to make sure it doesn't happen again. Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton sent a letter to Attorney General Loretta Lynch asking for a Justice Department investigation. He pointed out in his letter that in Phoenix there was just one polling location for every 108,000 residents. He also wrote in his letter that Maricopa County distributed fewer polling locations to parts of the county with higher minority populations. Mayor Stanton also criticized state officials for, in early March, approving a law that aims to suppress voter turnout by making it a felony with a presumptive one-year prison term and $150,000 fine for volunteers, or even a friend or a neighbor, to turn in a person's valid, sealed, and signed early ballot. The Arizona Republic called the entire situation an outrage in an editorial on Wednesday. They also wrote, "A lot of Maricopa County residents are wondering what was the motive behind the madness. Whether county officials indeed meant to suppress turnout. We don't believe that." Well, maybe they don't believe it. But as journalists, they should be skeptical. It would be wrong to immediately dismiss Arizona's long history of voting rights problems. There were so many things that went wrong on Tuesday that it would be naive to think the results were nothing more than a random sequence of unrelated and unfortunate events that formed a perfect storm that disenfranchised voters. In my experience, perfect storms are far more infrequent than bad intentions. As always, we invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com for live streaming audio. The daily blog is eatthebankers.com. You'll find text, audio, author interviews, and much more, including a free podcast, at eatthebankers.com. That's eatthebankers.com. Time now for the 420 break. We'll come back and talk with Shayna Stevens. Stick around. More to come on The Review.